This is Terrio Media.
Success in real estate has nothing to do with shiny objects. It has everything to do with mastering the basics. The three pillars of real estate investing: attract, convert, exit. Matt Terrio has been helping real estate investors do just that for more than a decade now. If you want to make money in real estate, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit reiace.com. Here's Matt.
Hey there, Epic Investor. It's Matt Terrio from Epic Real Estate, where we show people how to invest in real estate using more of their mind than their money, using creative real estate investing strategies with an emphasis on retiring early. And if this is your first time here, really glad that you found us. If you like what you hear, make sure you hit the subscribe button before you go. And if this is not your first time here, welcome back. And thank you for continuing to share this with your friends and family. We just would not be going on 12 years if it weren't for you doing that. So thank you. I got a great guest for you today. Going to discuss notes. And then I've got the news, of course, and This Week in Crypto. Today's sponsor of the show, REI Black Book. REI Black Book is everything you need to run your real estate investing business all in one place. Convert more of your leads into deals and build a predictable sales system with the only all-in-one marketing and sales toolkit built for investors just like you. You can get 14 days of free access plus their automated follow-up machine absolutely free at epicblackbook.com. Epicblackbook.com. Alrighty, let's get right into it. Our guest today has been investing in real estate since 2001. He's done just about everything there is to do in real estate and even experienced the crash firsthand in 2008 and lived to tell about it. He's bought, fixed, rented, sold, flipped, or been a lender on 1,000-plus properties, but has found his sweet spot in performing and non-performing real estate notes. As with them, he feels in control of his own destiny. He's going to share with you all about that today. So please help me welcome to the show the note guy, Mr. Nick Legamaro. Nick, welcome to Epic Real Estate Investing.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Good to catch up.
I know.
It's nice that we're coming out of this COVID thing. Before we talk about that and your business and what you do and what you see for the future, tell me, what were you doing just before you got into real estate investing, and what had you make that transition?
That's a great question. It's been a long time since I've been doing this, since the early 2000s. I mean, I was pre-crash by about 5 years. So, before that, I worked corporate. I went to college, got a degree, came out of college, went to work for Pepsi-Cola right out of college, and they taught me everything I wanted, what I wanted not to know about making money for other people. And I figured at some point in time, if I'm going to work this hard, maybe I should try to figure out how to make it for myself than for other people. And it took me a little bit of while to get to that point, but not terribly long. I think I was pretty fortunate. Because here's the problem. And I'm going with this, my own kids, right? My daughter's just literally graduating from the University of Texas like tomorrow. And
congrats, by the way.
Thank you. And congrats to hers. But the thing I try to communicate with them, I go, if you ever want to start a business, or you ever think you want to do anything on your own, or you ever want to take that chance, now's the time to do it. Not wait, because you don't have the responsibilities now. If you go get the corporate job, you're stuck, man. You got the golden handcuffs on you. That's how they lock you in. And it's really, really hard to rip away from that once you start getting the insurance and the paid vacation and that paycheck, whether you show up for work or not. It's really, really difficult to walk away. And that's why I tell people you really need to start now, not later. And you can't wait, because the longer you wait, the further you go down that road. And then you eventually got to turn around and come back that other direction to go down the path that you ultimately want to take.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you wait then?
I started a couple companies in the late 90s. I was probably in the corporate world for about 5 or 6 years. And then I started doing some other stuff in telecommunication. And, you know, we had one of the very first VoIP over anything companies. We did it back then when you had to pay for long distance. And we had a bundle service, just to show how far things have come along now. And then I got into real estate in early 2000. But then back then, Matt, there wasn't a lot of stuff out there. there wasn't education, there wasn't REI groups, there wasn't meetup, there wasn't data readily available on the internet to consume. I mean, it was all extremely, extremely manually driven. And I was, for the first 4 or 5 years, I did really low end fix and flips, sold them to other investors that had more experience than me, and they turned them into rental properties, and that's what they did. And then 08 comes along, and we know what happened there. And I took about a year off, and starting in 2010 is when I really got back into real estate again, and really put a really conscious effort into figuring out what model I wanted to follow, why I wanted to follow it, and how I was going to accomplish that. Because I knew the whole time that the way that you build wealth and is through real estate. There is really no other option, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe crypto. No, just kidding. I'm not a crypto guy, man.
Oh, you're not?
No. I mean, I'm thinking about it, but yeah, you know, hey, borrow some of your money. I'll see what I can do with it. How's that?
Yeah, yeah. I'm all in. I've been in since 2017, so I'm starting to mesh the two together.
I know, man. I wish I was in, you know, there again. Hey, I wish I was in then. Now everybody's like, right. Oh, now it's too late. Sort of like the whole wholesaling game, man. If anybody had wholesales and has been doing it for a while, they go, I cannot pay in that money for that property. I could have bought that property 5 years ago for half the price.
Yeah.
And they're failing to see the opportunity that what it's going to be going forward versus, and they get stuck in their ways on what it was before. And it, you know, paralysis by analysis, right? And you end up getting nothing done.
Right. The question is, what are you going to say 10 years from now?
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Totally.
Absolutely. That's exactly how you got to look at it. And it's not going to change. I mean, it's going to, the environment is going to change as far as the real estate market, but building wealth in real estate probably will never change.
Yeah. It's really kind of the final frontier that we have available to us, at least for the average person, right?
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. There's 50 different ways you can make money, probably 100 different ways you can make money. And they're all very, very viable options. It's all about execution. At the end of the day, it's just about executing on whatever that path is that you want to take and making it happen, and not, you know, waiting for excuses or coming up for reasons why you can't get it done.
Totally. So great transition. What's your one way?
My one way is I'm all about being the bank, Matt. 100%. I'm all about being the bank. I'm all about controlling, not owning real estate. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's some way, shape, or form to be able to control the property by having a mortgage note. Be the bank. You know, if you, in every city that you go to, Matt, the biggest buildings in every city are bank buildings. They have Bank of America or Chase or Fargo on the top of them. And there's a reason that is that way. And they've learned a long time ago how to control and not own, and how to leverage and how to secure their investment by securitizing it through the property itself. Mm-hmm. And I figure if it's good enough for those guys, it's probably good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's really it. And I'm pretty bullish on it, to be quite honest with you.
Got it. No, and that's good. I want someone to take a stand. I've got some questions. I can play devil's advocate here.
Please bring it on.
You know, I got a friend, Joel Block. Do you know Joel?
I don't think I know Joel. I know a lot of guys. I don't know Joel.
He helped me set up my fund, and he runs a little program if you want to go set up a fund, and he'll walk you through that.
I am in the state of Texas. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the state of Texas is a little bit different than a lot of the other places. And things are a little bit easier to do certain ways than others. Lease options are a little bit more difficult. They can be done. Contract for deeds are not really the way to go. They can still be done, but a lot more moving parts than that. So anyway, enough with that. Mm-hmm. On with the questions.
Texas is just slightly different than the rest of the country.
Yeah.
But yes. That was sarcasm there.
It's okay. I take it.
No,
but I wear it with a badge.
Based on our conversation before we started recording, I think it's good for all the right reasons. I mean, it's different for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
But anyway, so being the bank. So my friend Joel Block, he tells me that, Matt, the money is in the money, is his quote, right? And I kind of know what that means, but I don't know if it's necessarily been my experience, because I've tried both. I've done both. I hold about 50 notes. I hold about 50 properties. And I see a lot of pros and cons for both sides. And I almost see a need for a portfolio to have both.
I agree.
But I agree. To go straight down the bank route, there's two things that I'm thinking about right now. I don't know. Before I go there, I probably went there too quickly. Why don't you tell me, being the bank, like, are you buying notes from banks? Are you creating your own notes? Are you buying notes from other investors? Tell me about your note business.
So yes to all those. I've done all of them. I continue to do them. And if it's a deal, it's a deal. I like buying notes just like people like buying fix and flip properties. And I can buy a note, I can fix the note, and I can flip the note. Just like you can a piece of property, I can do the same thing with note. So a lot of times sellers don't underwrite the borrower files correctly. We got to come in and do some cleanup and, you know, make sure we have a 1003 application on file and a credit report. But that's how we make the money on that. But I love creating the notes, and I love creating them out of basically thin air. And what I mean by that is going and acquiring the asset initially, either through some kind of acquisition, whether it be with cash, hard money, seller financing, or buying it subject to an existing lien.
You're talking about the hard asset.
The hard asset to sell. So I got to take possession of that for a certain period of time because I got to fix it, right? I got to fix it and make it consumable to sell it to an owner finance buyer, because that's all I want to mess with. I don't want to mess with retail. I want to mess only with owner finance buyers. And once I get to that point, then I can create the mortgage. And that'll be a wrap mortgage for a short period of time, depending on how I have the debt structured on the front side, okay? Regardless, I'm trying to get, for me personally, and we can talk about hypothecation. I'm not a big fan of hypothecation where you write all the notes and then you pledge the notes as collateral and borrow it from the bank. I don't like doing that. What I personally do is I like to write a first and a second lien. And I write the first lien at a dollar amount that allows me to sell that note immediately, get all my capital back out. So I'm in a cash neutral position. There's no cost basis. And then my profit on the deal is a free and clear second lien on the property that I already know everything about, plus whatever cash that comes in transactionally from the borrower when I sell it on the wrap mortgage. That's what I like to do the most. Okay. And I do it quite a bit. So I end up with a bunch of $30,000 second liens. But man, if I do 30 of those a year, that's $1 million almost in free and clear notes at a double digit yield with no cost basis. I mean, what's the return on that? I mean, can't even calculate it because there's no cost basis.
It's probably more than 5 or 6%.
Right? It's probably.
Probably. But, okay.
You know, and it's a great deal for my note buyers when I go to sell that first lien because, well, first of all, banks always get paid, Matt, right? Mm-hmm. I don't give a crap about forbearance or any of that stuff because the banks will get paid. They always get paid because they might not get paid today. They might not get paid tomorrow. They might get paid a year from now, but they have that property as security and collateral for the money that they lent to the borrower, right? And so they might have to come and do a loan modification. So what? Do a loan modification, get what happens? All they do is move it to the back end of the note. Guess what that does?
Let's pause for a second. Yeah. Let's come back because there's all kinds of stuff where I can just sense that heads are swirling. So first and second. So you buy the asset.
Yes.
So let's say we bought a little house, right?
Yep.
You fixed it up. And now you're going to sell it and carry the note back. So you're going to sell it, seller financing with you being the seller.
That's
you're
going to
finance for your buyer. Okay. So let's say it's a $100,000 house.
Okay.
What would be the typical situation of how you'd put a first and a second on there? How would you sell that? What's that structure look like?
So I would take, so I would probably, my cost basis, so I usually write approximately a 75% first lien.
Okay.
And then the second lien is the difference between the sale price and the cash that I receive from the down payment. So if I get a 10% down payment, for example, okay, then the numbers would say I'd have a $15,000 or 15% second lien.
Second. Got it.
Okay.
Okay. So then I got that. So that's easy to do.
Yep.
Easy to understand. Now you said you sell the first.
That's correct.
Okay. So this scenario, 75%, so it's $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
You sell it for $75,000?
Not quite that because the note has not been seasoned. So I have to pay, I got to take a little bit of a haircut, pay a little bit of discount on, but I'm pretty close to that number because the LTV of that first note to that borrower is pretty low relative to the whole thing. The other reason why I can get close to that amount because I'm still in the deal in the second lien position. So that gives the note buyer also a little bit more security and protection because they know that if they don't get paid, I don't get paid basically.
Right. Okay. Do you have a typical interest rate or how you determine your interest rate?
Yeah. So we underwrite all the borrowers just like Chase or Bank of America or anybody else would do. So we're going to follow Dodd-Frank compliance. Uh-huh. And in Dodd-Frank, it says I can write those notes at APOR plus 6.5%. And all APOR is an annual prime offer rate, which is a government index that says if the rate is 3% today, then I can add 6.5 points to that. And that could be my my effective rate basically to the borrower. Okay. So most of the stuff I'm writing right now is in that mid nine and a half, nine and three quarters range as we sit here today.
Okay. Very good. And then what's the rate you put on the second?
So that's another thing. So I get that. So what I personally do is my I take the origination fees that I'm allowed to collect and I put them on the second note because that's what I'm going to keep. And then I can actually add, since that's a junior lien or it's not the primary lien on the note, I can actually add an additional two points on that. So I'm writing my second liens in the 10.5, 10.75 range. I don't go full value, but I am definitely in the 10.5 range right now on the seconds.
Okay. So these are like more than double what the market is calling.
Yeah, it's probably more than triple.
Yeah, no, I was being sarcastic again.
Yeah, well, but
you're right.
Let's talk about that for a second, if you want to, because
So I'm like, who's your ideal customer for this?
Well, it's anybody that can't go down to Bank of America and get a loan, and that's a big number right now, Matt, and especially in a post-COVID environment, because there's a lot of people that have had jobs, they've had to change careers. They're no longer W-2. They're doing side hustles and they're making money some other way. If you're an entrepreneur, banks do not like entrepreneurs. Let's just be honest.
Right.
They don't like the unknown. They want to see a pretty borrower that has a W-2 job that works for, you know, Frito-Lay or wherever it might be. And they want to know that you're going to get paid and it's going to be consistent. And they want to see all that stuff, but that's just not the way America is these days. There's a lot of foreigners that are in the United States that have the right to work in the United States and pay taxes in the United States and are legally in the United States, but they can't go buy a house because they don't have a social security number. That's one thing. Or you're an entrepreneur like myself and you as well. I own multiple companies, Matt, and I don't get W-2s. I get just distributions. And they don't like when you own multiple companies. I could, even if I have all the cash in a bank to go buy that property, they still don't like me. It's just how they assess the risk. And I don't know the exact number is right now, but I think the number is above 60%, where the population can't even go down and get a traditional bank loan because of certain factors that prevent them to do it.
Got it.
And that's really where we are. There's a huge marketplace for people that want to have home ownership, but just have been told no for whatever reason. And that's our marketplace.
Got it. You know, the irony there is, and it's just kind of occurring to me that my assistant just bought a house and I can't because she gets the W-2 paycheck from me, but the person that provides a W-2 paycheck doesn't qualify.
Isn't that funny?
Right.
I mean, it's ironic. I don't know if it's funny.
Yeah.
Let me put a couple other pieces of data out there because I'm sort of an analytical guy.
Sure. So we got 60% of the population can't qualify. Yeah. So that's a good number.
Yeah, it's a great number. And so here's what I'll say. So I tell people to go do the Zillow test, okay? Because a lot of people don't. First of all, most people don't even know that they can write a note and be the bank. Let's be honest. They just don't. Second of all, it's a $26 billion industry right now, Matt. $26 billion almost, billion with a B. So that means in the last 4 years, over $100 billion of notes have been written by people like you and me that aren't named Chase or Bank of America. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty substantial number.
Right.
Right? So, and why is that? It's for the reasons that we just said. So here's a test. Here's a little exercise or homework assignment I like to have people go in and do to really understand visually what this means. Go to Zillow and go do a search for properties for sale by a city, a zip code, county, whatever. I like to pick a county. Mm-hmm. And you put in, and I'll just do like Dallas County in Dallas, Texas, okay? And it'll say there's 3,000 properties available for sale. Okay. Okay. Then I go into the refine the search criteria, and I go in there and I put leave everything the same, and I go in it. I put the keywords in owner financing, seller financing. Mm-hmm. You know what that number? You know what that number drops down to when it said 3,000 before I put those search criterias in?
One or two.
It's you can count them on two hands probably.
Yep. Because okay. I search all the time to buy for myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my point is, if we know that the population needs creative financing or owner financing, whatever term you want to use, because 60% doesn't qualify, but only half of 1% is available to buy in that, that seems like a pretty good business model and opportunity for me. Yeah. It's economics 101. It's supply and demand. The demand is far greater than the supply for what we're talking about here. And that is the opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I like it. No, it makes sense. I'm always looking at that from a buyer's perspective, but then I'm looking at it from a seller's perspective that, you would have very minimal competition on doing that.
There's very little competition.
So why do you like the notes better than, say, doing a rent-to-own lease option type structure?
Well, I mean, if I was 30 years old, man, I might have a different outtake and look at it. But honestly, you know, have you ever had a mortgage on a house from a traditional lender?
I just got my first one like last year.
Okay. So I just sold my house that I had a Bank of America loan on. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had a 30-year mortgage like 99% of the population gets, and I literally took 21 years and I paid it off. Okay. I never called the bank one time, never called Bank of America one time when I had that note. Mm-hmm. And most people that have a home mortgage with a bank don't call the bank. They don't call them when the toilet breaks or the roof leaks or they need to fix the foundation or replace the water heater or whatever. They don't call. That's the beauty of being the bank. You control it. It's quite understood that who the owner of the property is. And just the mentality is just a whole different thing. Can you make more money doing the other options? Absolutely, you probably can. But a lot of things got to go in your favor. You got to have the property occupied. You got to get paid. Okay. I think we learned a lot in the last 15 months. What happens if you're a landlord and you don't get your rent payments, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about the bank will get paid. I'm not sure you can say that about landlords. Mm-hmm. You may get money. You may get some. You could surely put a judgment on somebody, but that doesn't mean you're going to actually get the physical cash. Mm-hmm. And you know, those are things. I don't get the depreciation, which is probably the biggest argument, but I do get amortized. I do get amortized money. And I get it paid and I get all my interest up front and my risk gets mitigated every month that goes by because my exposure and what I have out, it goes down. And that it's just a personal preference. It's like ice cream, man. Some people like chocolate, some like vanilla. And it just really depends on what your preference is. I just prefer to be the bank. I figured this way, if renting properties and being a landlord was such a great deal, I would think the banks would probably figure out a way to do that. And they probably figure a way to get depreciation also. Mm-hmm. And I think the trade-off, at least in my eyes, is I like the trade-off that I get from being a bank versus being a lien lord versus being a landlord. That's riff. But to each their own, man. There's 1,000 ways you can make money.
I'm going to start using that.
Hey, I got it trademarked and I've got it.
You got lien lord trademarked?
I got it, Lean Lord. Nice. I got the domains. Yeah, I thought it was sort of cool. I actually got some shirts made up. Maybe I'll send you one.
Yeah, Lean Lord, TM.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. I will give
it's you. Not international, so you could probably market it in Brazil and Costa Rica and
there you go.
Those other countries if you want.
Go right. Well, ahead. I'll give you credit each time I say it, okay?
There you go.
Perfect. All right, so let's go back to our structure. We got, now we know where the buyer comes from. That makes sense. 60% can't qualify for a loan. There's very minimal opportunities like this out there. So you got zero competition. So I have found the same thing. Like the buyer pool is pretty deep if you know how to market the property. So 75%, or excuse me, like say there are, go back to our house. We got $75,000 first. And if that's got, you know, a 9.5% interest rate on there, that's a really good piece of paper. And that is a sellable piece of paper for sure. Where do you find that person?
Well, I'm one of them, first of all. So, you know, with usanotepro.com, that's exactly what we do. We buy, sell, and create mortgage notes. But there's other, just like there's other vehicles that you can use for real estate, There's mm-hmm. note buyers and sellers out there just the same. I mean, you go on Google and start sell my note fast for cash, just like you would put in sell my house fast for cash. It's there. Now, I will tell you this. There's not nearly as many of them as there are the other, but it doesn't matter. There's plenty of it. I don't know the exact number that's doing right now. $25 billion, if the average is $200,000 average and there's $25 billion a year, I mean, that's substantial. I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's it's not that unique. Let's just leave it at that. Banks buy them all the time. Well, I built a whole company on this, and we sold it to a federally chartered bank. And a lot of the notes that we sold prior to that, we sold to financial institutions because they couldn't create and write what we did, but they could buy them. That's mm-hmm. the other beautiful thing of it is like, okay, that's even better, right?
Right.
You can't do what I can do, but I can sell you what I have.
Okay, so you sell the first, and then you hold on to the second. Are you receiving payments on the second?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the cash down, that just goes into your pocket.
Yeah, the net cash, because I got to pay marketing fee and overhead and stuff like that. But yeah, so a typical transaction for me right now that I'm doing, my net cash on a transaction is about $15,000 to $18,000, the net cash. And the second lien is about $30,000 to $33,000 at about 10.5%. And there's no cost basis on it. So I get some cash now in the transactional portion of it, and I get some cash flow
right
over as long as that note's in play. And mm-hmm. I guess what I also get, I get the lump sum payoff at the end when that note either gets paid. I'm going to write a 30-year note, but let's be honest, most notes don't go 30 years,
right?
The average lifespan of a note somewhere 9.5, 10 years now. It's gone up a little bit. So 10 years from now, I run the amortization schedule. The title company calls the bank for the payoff. Who's the bank? I'm the bank, right? Mm-hmm. And I run my amortization table based on the terms and the rate of the note that I wrote. And I say that the payoff on my original $33,000 note 10 years from now, I don't have my financial calculator in front of me, but it's probably somewhere around $26,000 or $27,000, mm-hmm. right? So guess what I get when that buyer either sells that property that I sold to them or they refinance? I get mm-hmm. a big fat check. Now I just got another $26,000 or $27,000.
Got it.
And that's sort of the beauty of the game, in my opinion. Instead of just flipping out of it and taking all transactional cash. And this is something a lot of wholesalers should and can do, and they don't mm-hmm. even realize that they can do it. And we work with them all the time, and I know you do as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Wholesalers are really they're missing so much of the pie when they do it the way that they do it. So you're in second position. So if the buyer defaults, you just go ahead and foreclose and take it back and do it all over again.
Surely can. Because when I write my notes, I always have write a first refusal on the first.
Right.
I write that in there before I sell it.
Sure.
I do some other little creative things. But at the end of the day, most of the stuff, that's how we write it. And then it doesn't matter how I take it down, right? I could take it down with hard money. I could take it down with cash. I can take it down subject to. I could take it down with seller financing. Now, obviously, seller financing and subject to are better because I can let that debt ride as long as I need to. I don't even have to sell off the first right away, right?
Right.
Because I'm just arbitraging at that point. I'm just taking the spread, the difference. But guess what? The note gets called, sell the first note, pay off the underlying debt. Do it all the time. I don't have to do that because that's when we structure it correctly. That never happens. But I can do that. And I've had sellers come back to me 2 years later, 3 years later on a sub two transaction goes, hey man, I really need to get this out. I got a government job. They're calling my stuff. I go, no problem. I'll just sell the note, pay off the debt and be on. I'm not trying to hold anybody hostage on all this stuff. I can make just as much money on the front side or if I wait 5 years to get it. I want to help people, right? This is what this is really about, is help solving problems and being problem solvers and not problems. And when I can help a seller short term out of a situation they're in, then that's a good thing for me. And when I can help a buyer obtain home ownership when they've been told no, that's a good thing for me too. And I get to just, you know, materially participate on both sides of the transaction.
Nice. So when you acquire the asset, you're kind of looking to be all in with the purchase and the rehab at 75%.
You know, it's a little tougher right now, Matt, to be quite honest with you. It's probably closer to 78, maybe 80%. But here's the deal. I don't have to be that inch because I still can take that cash that I have that I got from the down payment And even if I sell, let's just say my cost basis in this example is $80,000, okay? And I write the first note for $75,000, right? And I sell that first note for, let's say, $73,000. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm $7,000 in the hole after I sell that first note, right? Well, but I just netted, what is that, $10,000 in cash. So I could just take that $10,000 cash and pay down. And so now I don't get as much cash on the deal, but I still get the whole second note. And that's my profit on the deal. So there might be a little less cash. It just really depends on the deal.
Okay. All right. So now we can switch to a devil's advocate.
Yeah. Bring on the devil.
All right. First thing is I'm looking at, I know as a bank, holding a mortgage is actually a liability on their books because it continues to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Are you concerned with that at all? Because your note gets smaller.
As me being, as when I'm being the bank?
Yeah, because your note's getting smaller and smaller.
That's like true, but I also know that I also know that the likelihood that it's going to go 30 years mm-hmm. is highly, highly unlikely. And if I see it going that way, I can always cash out of my note. Somebody's always willing to buy. Because you got to think of it this way, Matt. There's a lot of people that are looking for alternative investment strategies where a 3 or 4% return on a securitized investment is a great deal. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily for you and me because I can get more. But you know how much money is sitting in IRA accounts, for example, that are self-directed, right, where it's just sitting there idle, not getting a nickel of interest? I mean, there's probably $3 trillion out there right now of mm-hmm. idle IRA money that people can invest into whatever they want because they control it and they don't even know that they can do it. So it's more of an education thing. And there's a lot of people, you know, you can go buy Amazon stock and Tesla stock and whatever you want all day long. But, you know, if any of those go down in value, good luck getting one of those two CEOs to pay you your loss, right?
Mortgage. I don't care about the stock market. I'm comparing landlord to landlord right now.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. So you would rather just sell it and get the cash and lose the cash flow then. That's
if I had to and I just go buy or create something else different. But I'm gonna get that rate of return, that interest, that coupon rate, it's there for the life of the note. It just, you're just getting front loaded interest first and a little bit of principal and then it flips, but the payment doesn't change over time. So the effectiveness of that yield, it doesn't change as it goes over in time.
Right. Okay. So then that takes me to my next thing, because it doesn't change, which is becoming more and more of a topic these days, your vulnerability to inflation. How are you feeling about that?
Well, it's a little bit different for me because when I have a zero cost basis on it, I'm not nearly as concerned. And so the pros and cons of this are whether the market goes up or down, it's immaterial to me. It's a non-factor because if the property values drop, I'm still getting my $1,000 a month payment. If the property values go up, I'm still getting my $1,000 a month payment. If the properties go up in value and I'm getting my $1,000, my position's even more secure. So the real risk that comes in is if the property values drop tremendously and I stop getting my $1,000 a month payment. Uh-huh. But there again, that could very easily be the same thing in having a vacant property or not getting paid from a tenant or doing all those other things that go into just, you know, the risk that they inherited. Right. Risk.
So that's comparing the cash flow to the cash flow.
Yep.
But then there's other profit centers on the physical asset of the real estate as well.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm asking you questions and I already know the answer.
No, I'm glad. I like to say it out loud because, yeah, you know, things changed 6 months ago is not the same as it is today. Right.
Well, here's another point to my inflation question is if you get the $1,000 regardless of what the market does, but I'm talking about what the dollar does. For example, you know, $1,000 is a round of four for a golf at a really nice country club.
Yep.
And 2 years, 3 years, that same round of golf might be $1,300, but you still only have the same $1,000.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah. Well, there again, if you get, you can surely, but the nice thing about these are they're very liquid assets. So you can surely, you know, dispose of them or sell them or whatever you want and do it and choose to do it. But there again, if things get, you know, that's a good point. If things start becoming, inflation becomes super high. But here's the other thing you got to remember, Matt, is if rates start going up and inflation gets higher, guess what I get to do? I get to do the same thing, right? I get to write higher interest rates. Maybe I'm writing 12 or 13% in
on your new deals.
Yes.
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 Right.
Yes.
So, I mean, that makes a case for you that you'll always be working.
Well, it means a case that I can just write at a higher rate. So,
right. But you got to go write a new deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. And then the next thing is, because that inflation thing, that's really high on my radar right now, because we witnessed a lot this year and I'm seeing it everywhere. And just a really simple example is my wife's latte was $4 this time last year, and now it's $5. So we see inflation at 2%. We see the consumer price index at 4%, but no. We really felt it in our pocketbook at 20%.
Yeah. Look at what's going on. Look at how many people are in forbearance right now and are in default, but look how low unemployment is. How the hell does that even make sense? I don't get it. We're not getting all the information to make the best decisions that we can make.
I can talk about that one forever also, but try and stay focused.
Yeah. I'm trying, keep me in my lane.
Right. No, that's good. No. And then the third thing would be, and just the news as of today of what Biden is doing to build up the IRS and their agents and their staff and their force. Like, they are getting direct bank access, implementing AI technology, and increasing their agent force by, I don't know, it was like 4 or 5 times. And they're going after your dollar, and they're going to make sure that you pay your fair share, Nick. And so I'm the different way that that note is taxed versus the passive income from the real estate is taxed.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a CPA, not a financial advisor. So I'm not sure you're going to give any advice or recommendation.
Right. No, we just played two of those on a podcast. That's all.
Yeah. Thank goodness I got Bob Bloom in my corner. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, Bob's my guy too. Okay. So
anybody go get some asset protection. If he can't help me, nobody can. That's what I keep telling him, man.
All right. I'm going to throw that at him. Anyway, all that to be said, I just want to have a little bit of fun with you because I got a bunch of notes too. So I see, I see the pros of the notes. I like the passive income and no phone calls from anybody. Right. So I like that. And then with so much real estate that I own, I've got so many loss carry forwards available to me. I just offset it by doing more notes. And so I can
Be much more concerned if I, like we talked about it just briefly, on hypothecating the notes. I think that could be a dangerous proposition, you know, where you basically take that $100,000 note and you go to the bank and you assign the note as collateral and you borrow, you know, 5% money, right, on 70% of it. And then you take that money and you reinvest it there. Well, but I'm not a personal fan of it. A lot of people do it though. And I, you know, when times are good, everything's good, man.
Right. Well, here's the other side of that. You know, if you're going to be aware and conscious of what inflation is doing, because inflation is working at us from both directions, from the printing of money, which is one way inflation is created. The second way is supply shock. And we're short on everything right now, right? Yeah. I mean, we're short on ketchup packets in our
Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah, the Chick-fil-A sauce.
What's that all about?
We're short on the lumber and the steel and the sand to mix the concrete. And it's like, so we have kind of both forces that would typically cause inflation, one or the other, but we have both of them working really strong right now. And I see carrying a lot of debt is actually a really good position to be in, being the debtor or the debtee. No, I want to be the debtor. Yeah. I want to be borrowing money because that inflation is going to crush my debt just as much as it'll crush my dollar.
Well, that's why I love subject to deals, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's cheap bank debt and it's never going to change.
Right.
Think about that for a second. Think about what's been written over the last 10 years, Matt. Every gosh darn loan on the planet has been written somewhere between 2.5% and 5%.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
then Nick, we go down the other way.
I'm not going down. I'm just saying you brought up debt.
Right.
There's your cheap bank debt that is never going
to
change.
No, and I love it. But then all of a sudden, if that starts to increase, that's going to be a real asset that you got this 2 or 3% debt. And now everyone else is getting new loans at 5 and 6%. But then there makes the case for now that the banks might not let the subject to slide so much because they could have wrote that new paper at a higher debt.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
I can't believe I'm even talking like this. Like, you know, five years ago, I wasn't thinking about this. I was just
giving me cash flow. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
There's so many other things to think about now.
We keep talking about it long enough, it'll change again before we finish this call.
Exactly. And then with the whole crypto thing and the decentralized finance, what is that going to do to the central banks? their days are numbered, like the printing press.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway. The world is changing. We got to change fast with it or else we're going to get
exactly. Left.
Sure.
Exactly. You got to change fast. Exactly. You got to be nimble and you got to be quick.
Totally. Well, Nick, it's been a pleasure. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
They just reach out to us on our website, usanotepro.com, www.usanotepro.com. They can reach me out there. They can, if they want to talk about notes, buying, selling, creating, lending. There's educational stuff out there.
What's the list of the services that you do there?
We basically buy, sell, and create mortgage notes.
We teach people
how to be the bank. That's really what this is ultimately about. Either buying it and being the bank, or creating it from your own efforts. You know, we work with landlords that are tired of being landlords and want to get out of the landlord game because they're tired of not getting paid, and converting them. They love the cash flow, but they don't like the landlord aspect of it. So we teach them how to become a big bank instead of a landlord, what we already talked about. And there's wholesalers that we do a lot of work with, which we show them how to monetize their dead leads and go get the creative financing element in it to do exactly what we talked about. And then we have people like my mom and my dad and people that have a ton of money sitting in self-directed IRAs and say they don't want to do anything but get a return and protect their equity and their wealth. And I think that one of the best ways to do it is investing in the notes, because it's still securitized by that physical property, which I personally like. At least for now. That could change in 6 weeks, man.
Yeah,
you never know.
It's only 3 p.m. here, and who knows what's going to happen in the next hour.
It's early, man.
Stuff is changing quickly in this place. Well, super. So you can go to usanotepro.com, where Nick and his team will buy, sell, create notes, and they'll also teach you how to do it too. Fair enough.
We have some stuff that we're working on right now. It'll eventually be posted out there. I have some videos out there and sort of walk through some of the modeling. I'm all about collaborating and helping people get deals done. And as a result of it, I get more deals anyway. So it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Sweet. No, I think it's a good business. And it's a really good skill and base of knowledge to have. For example, the wholesaler who knows how to do just one thing, you start arming yourself with a few different layers of education. All of a sudden you can take these small deals and turn them into big deals,
yeah,
or take these no deals and turn them into deals. Right.
So yeah, that's it. And that's where we're going to when this forbearance lifts, man. That's where there's going to be a lot of people that have, this is different than 2007 and 8, man. We're not going to see short sales. Short sales.
We're not.
Why would a short sale really exist? These properties have so much equity in them right now.
Yep.
And it's debt equity to the homeowner, and they're in a distressed situation. The only way they can get any of that equity out is to sell. They can't loan mod. They can't refinance. They have to sell and go do something else. And that's it. And that's the only, so there's going to be a huge opportunity for folks to come in and help those people out of those situations. And maybe you buy it subject to the existing debt and give them a little bit more for their equity, or it's a huge wholesale model too. And then you do whatever you want to do with it from there.
Yep. A lot of with every crisis is followed by opportunity.
That's where we're at right now.
Right?
Plenty of opportunity.
Perfect. So Nick, the lien holder, Nick, the lien lord, Legamaro.
It's actually Nick, the note guy, man.
Okay, we can do that too. I love the lien lord. I think this is great. I like play on words like that. And this is,
I know. It's all good, man.
It's been a pleasure. If you want to catch up with Nick, go to usanotepro.com. And Nick, let's stay in touch. We'll do this again.
All right, buddy. Thanks for your time.
You bet. Take care.
Right.
And I'll be back with the news right after this.
When you go to work for your money, does it return the favor?
If not,
no worries. You do not have a money problem. You merely have an idea problem. We're CashflowSavvy.com, and we'd like to share a new idea with you around income real estate that can transform your financial future and accelerate its arrival. Go to CashflowSavvy.com and download a free investor's package. CashflowSavvy.com. You do not have a money problem, merely an idea problem. CashflowSavvy.com. More ideas, less worries. CashflowSavvy.com.
All right, in the news, Senator Rand Paul out of Kentucky had just two words in response to news of unearthed emails from Dr. Anthony Fauci this week. If you didn't know, thousands of emails obtained by BuzzFeed News and hundreds more reviewed by the Washington Post through Freedom of Information Act requests show Fauci's responses to both critics and high praise as he worked to communicate the dangers of COVID-19 to the U.S. as director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. In one particular email, he was thanked for playing down the possibility of the virus being born in a lab. And Senator Rand Paul had just two words: told you. Paul wrote that in a Tuesday tweet. And, you know, you never want to be that guy that says, I told you so. That's never like a cool thing to do. But sometimes you just can't resist. And I can imagine Senator Rand Paul is feeling rather vindicated this week, just like Senator Tom Cotton last week and Dr. Atlas the week before. Longtime Duke men's basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski is calling it quits after 46 years. Krzyzewski will retire after the 2021-22 college basketball season after putting together a coaching career for the ages. He led the Blue Devils to 5 NCAA tournament championships, 12 Final Four appearances, and he won 1,170 games, which is the most in men's college basketball history. So congrats to him. The hits keep coming. Shares of AMC, the largest movie theater chain in the world, surged more than 120% Wednesday to a new peak above $70 before falling back slightly. Trading of the shares was halted twice due to volatility. The stock closed Wednesday at $62.55, up 95% for the day. I actually own a few of those, and I didn't even know this until I read this in the news. I should probably check on them. I think I bought them at $11, and now they're $62. That's a pretty good return. I think I only have 3 or 4 shares, though. But hey, it's better than a hole in the head, right? The Olympics are still on despite a ton of backlash. The spotlight's on Tokyo and Simone Biles, of course, beginning July 23rd. Sick of being indoors? All U.S. national parks are free to enter on August 4th and August 25th. The first NFL preseason game is August 5th with the Steelers versus the Cowboys. Broadway returns to New York September 14th, and no spectators were allowed at the 2020 U.S. Open, but tennis fans can fill the stands this year from August 30th to September 12th. And speaking of tennis, this weekend, there's been more back and forth than tennis fans are used to. Naomi Osaka, star tennis player and the highest earning female athlete in the world, dropped out of the French Open this week. The backstory here is Osaka announced last week that she wouldn't be doing any press during the tournament, saying that press conferences were bad for her and other players' mental health. And quite honestly, I don't blame her a bit. It just takes one bad reporter these days to publish a bad story or with a little bit of misinformation or to make a mistake, whether that's honestly or accidentally. And then all you got to do is just watch social media take off with it. And that's no fun. I wouldn't want to deal with the press either if I were her. So kudos to her for standing her ground. It was kind of expensive. She was fined and everything. And she said, nope, ain't going to do it. Hopefully she will be participating in the future. And hopefully she'll get some more understanding from the powers that be of the National Tennis Association. I think that's called the NTA, National Tennis Association. All right. Democrats in the Texas House of Representatives staged a walkout to block the passage of a restrictive voting bill opposed by many corporations, including American Airlines and Dell. And President Joe Biden is comparing that bill to Georgia's voting bill and putting them both in the lump sum of Jim Crow in the 21st century and an attack on the right for black and brown people to vote. You know, if this is true, these are two very bad bills and we should oppose these. But you know what? I've read the bills, both of them. And I've read the Jim Crow laws as well. And I'm totally missing it. I don't see the comparison at all. I read the whole thing on everything. And I realize this is a very sensitive subject, so I'm not making light of it. I mean, I really do want to know. So if there are similarities that I'm missing, please send me an email pointing out as such. I must not be reading in between the lines in the right place. Legal cannabis sales in the U.S. passed $17.5 billion in 2020, a 46% increase over 2019. American Airlines and Southwest are delaying offering alcoholic beverages on flights due to an increase in unruly passengers. And speaking of unruly people, a Boston Celtics fan was arrested after he threw a water bottle at Kyrie Irving's head, the latest in a string of incidents where fans have targeted NBA players. Come on, peeps, grow up. You can handle it. And then porta potty companies are struggling to meet demand. And that's all I got there. I thought that was an interesting headline. And it made for a good, what do you call that? Pattern interrupt. I don't know what's causing the excessive demand of porta potties. I guess on all the construction sites, right? That would make sense. So the UK recorded zero new daily coronavirus deaths yesterday for the first time since the pandemic began. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has pegged June 21st for a full reopening, and industry groups are pressuring him to follow through. Krispy Kreme filed to go public this week under the ticker symbol DNUT, Donut. A much better choice than KRPY, crappy, but less creative than GLZD, glazed. There are three stats that illustrate the travel industry's rebound. Number one, American Airlines expects 47 of its top 50 corporate accounts to start traveling again this year in a promising sign for business travel, per the Wall Street Journal. Number two, TSA screened nearly 2 million passengers at U.S. airports this week, on Friday specifically, the most since the pandemic began. And number three, Hilton's CEO said that Saturday night of Memorial Day weekend was the busiest its hotels have been in the COVID era. 93% of rooms were occupied. And President Biden is suspending all oil and gas leases in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, reversing a signature policy of former President Trump. Can you say $5 a gallon? Now, for this week in crypto. This Week in Crypto is sponsored by MyFirstCryptoCourse.com. It's the beginner's guide to investing in crypto assets that will show you how you could safely 10 to 20x your money this year with Bitcoin, even if you're brand new to crypto. For a limited time, Mike Dillard will give you three of the top crypto assets he's invested in this year. So go to MyFirstCryptoCourse.com, MyFirstCryptoCourse.com. Alrighty, Guggenheim. Active allocation fund controlled by global investment and advisory firm Guggenheim Partners has announced plans to launch a new fund that may seek investment exposure to cryptocurrencies with an emphasis on Bitcoin. Canadian light electric vehicle LEV manufacturer Daymac announced Spiritus, its upcoming electric car that will come with its own comprehensive crypto infrastructure. The model should support some crypto operations, including mining for Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, and Dogecoin during charging, and is set to debut in 2023, the company stated. I might be in line for that car. I got to see what it looks like first, but that might be that car just might pay for itself. Beginning August 3rd, Google advertisers offering crypto exchanges and wallets targeting the United States may advertise those products and services when they meet several requirements and are certified by Google. The company said this week in its updated policy. You know what that means? Translation to more mass adoption. Once those wallets and exchanges can start advertising their services and their products, that's only going to bring more people into crypto and it's only going to drive the price up. This is the part that gets me so excited is when these household names get involved and they just keep getting participating or they keep participating and making it more popular. And, you know, it's not too late. In fact, it's still very, very early. But you can only listen to so many of these headlines before you realize, wow, it seems like everybody's in this but me. It's going to get there. And speaking of household names, Coinbase is partnering with Apple and Google Wallets for crypto purchases as mobile payment usage is on track to surpass half of smartphone users by 2025. And that's This Week in Crypto, and that is the show. If you found this episode valuable, who else do you know that might too? There's a good chance you do know someone else who would, and when their name comes to mind, please share with them and ask them to click the subscribe button when they get here, and I'll take great care of them. Alrighty, that's it for today. God loves you, and so do I. Health, peace, blessings, and success to you. I'm Matt Terrio.
Yo. Yeah, yeah, we got the cash flow. You didn't know, homeboy, we got the cash flow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.